This is CliffCentral.com.
Good morning. It's Wednesday. Today, the triumphant return of Gord. Gord Laws will be joining us in a moment. Sia Sangweni is here.
All in one piece.
All in one piece. He made it. But he and I, Rob, and our besties, they like send each other like shirtless photographs while they're about to go to sleep at night. And it's all very beautiful and romantic. It really is.
This is quite a bromance.
Yeah, it's very special. I think, I mean, in some way, I'm kind of jealous that the two of them have got this relationship in their lives.
Why?
Well, because it's kind of nice, you know. It's like when I see a really happy couple, I'm always really excited for them. I know this is different, but you get the gist.
But up until you have to participate in
daily life of
shirtless selfies.
No, what I mean is like I'm jealous for about 5 minutes, and it's jealous in a good way. Like, I'm not jealous as in like I feel I'm missing out and that they've got a better situation than me. Mm. I'm like, oh, that's sweet. You know, like if you see someone with a really nice pair of shoes.
Yeah, because you don't have
those are nice.
You don't have to ask Gord twice. I'm pretty sure he just wants to embrace you right now.
Yeah, he's he's got a lot of love in him. What can we say?
That's what we love about him.
Hey, have you heard the latest episode of our series Guncast yet? You have to listen. It is probably the most explosive episode so far. Jonathan Fischer, who's from the South African Arms and Ammunition Dealers Association, shares some harsh truths about the policing sector in South Africa. You need to hear this. Mm. How it's affecting many industries and people who are trying to become legal gun owners. It's a must listen. It's hosted by Martin Hood, who is South Africa's foremost gun lawyer. He's such a proud gun lawyer, and he's so much the guy that his registration on his car is gun lawyer.
Yes. Mm-hmm. That's when I knew he'd really meant business.
That's it. Nice. This podcast series will inform and educate you about training, sports shooting, licensing, and all the other aspects of gun ownership. Bite the bullet. Download Guncast now at cliffcentral.com, on our app, or wherever you get your podcasts. That's right. Guncast. Love it. All right. Hello, Gordo.
How's it, Oaks?
Yes. The return.
The triumphant return. First
Something
of all,
like that.
Looked like you had a really good holiday. Are you back in the swing of things here already?
Yeah, I'm back a week now. And sorry, I'm just trying to turn my headphones up. There we go. I'm back a week now, and I've been slowly easing myself back into the realities of life.
Ah.
Bit of work. Back
yeah.
at boxing.
Because right. how long were you away for?
Back
in
on
total?
Diet, more or less. I've been smoking some weed, and that never helps.
Okay, caught.
Not today, but over the course of the last week or so.
In total, how long were you away
for? 2 weeks. We did 7 days in Ireland and 7 days in and around Amsterdam. We were in Dublin for the whole week, except
now when you
we
say
went to
we,
Kilkenny.
It was you and this female friend of yours?
Yes, she's my she's one of my
she's
best
She's your bestie,
friends.
Okay, and the two of you did Ireland, you did a bunch of Metallica
yeah.
dates, right?
We did Dublin for a week, but we rented a car and did a little 2-day detour to Kilkenny, which is just beautiful.
Uh-huh.
We
wouldn't even be able to point that out on a map.
I wouldn't have either. I do know now, though, having GPS, that you find Dublin and you go down, depending on the size of your map, about 2 centimeters. Yeah, and then we watched Metallica headline. Well, the headline was a Metallica concert. We watched Metallica play a concert at Sloane Castle in Meath, 75,000 Irish. I mean, I don't know if you guys have heard of Download Festival, but it's the same amount of people that come out for like 150 bands for 3 days just for Metallica. That was concerting on Expert, because you had to walk a mile or two from the parking area through a town, down into fields, wet, raining, like it was hard work, but it was really good fun. So being more mobile for this trip was probably the highlight for me.
Hmm.
So I shed a quick 25 kilos between January and this trip, and got myself reasonably fit. I mean, still a fat bastard, but a mobile fit fat bastard. So that was what made this trip the most special out of all the millions of cool things we did. And of course, hi, Rob. Who yeah. I have my gay relationship with, as you were just describing.
Yeah, the two of you it's a new bestie. You see, this show really brings people together.
Yeah, across the world, man. Yeah. I would not have known Hi Rob were it not for this show.
Correct.
And despite the fact that, as you mentioned, my bestie is not like a raging feminist at all, but she is a lesbian, so she rolls in those circles. And we met up.
So she didn't get in the way of
No,
you and
she's
Rob.
She's not like she's not personally offended at all. She hasn't taken up being upset as a sport, but she does roll in those circles. And we met up with some of her friends, and this one lady of the rugby boot persuasion was. Just
excuse me.
She thought that High Rob was the devil. She told me I met her again like 2 days later. She's like, that guy is the actual fucking devil. Because he just rolls in. High Rob is like so extra. He rolls in and he just like starts telling you the shit that he's been doing lately. Uh-huh. And he's like, but then I've also got, like, I won't air too much of his dirty laundry, but he'll straight up tell you that he's misbehaving and how he's getting away with it and what his plan is for the next move. And he doesn't have a filter. So, yeah,
there's no filter.
Don't take High Rob out with your politically correct left wing pronoun sensitive pals.
Can we just go back to how did you describe the lady?
Of the rugby boot persuasion. Yeah. I don't know how else to be polite about lesbians. Super cool. Make no mistake. Just like not
of the rugby boot persuasion.
Super
I've
cool
never
people.
Heard that before.
Really, really cool people. No judgment upon them. Just not ready for High Rob.
Oh my goodness.
You know, not ready for High Rob.
Oh goodness. I don't know how you traveled with someone for 2 weeks and you guys are still fine.
Dude, I'm pretty laid back.
Because traveling brings out often.
Yeah, that's
the worst.
That's why
people.
I chose this particular travel companion, my homegirl Shauna Conda. She's mellow, she's chilled, she likes to get on with it. Didn't get fussed about us deciding to sleep in one morning and screw the activity we were going to do, and didn't get fussed about me wanting to trek miles and miles and miles and keep doing stuff all the time. So you need a travel companion regardless of my situation. It's very important that you travel with someone that's able to get on with it, isn't moody or pissy.
Yeah, I agree.
Or
and
you just
really difficult to find a good travel companion.
And that matches your level of keenness on mission. You know, you guys all know about my ill-fated long-distance relationship. Took me to Spain three times in a year. You know, I certainly don't hold it against her, but this is traveling overseas with a person who wants to take you everywhere and show you everything and gets upset when you want to skip something or when you want to stop on the 8th out of 10 missions for the day that she's got scheduled. You want somebody, whether it's, you don't want somebody with you who doesn't want a mission when you want a mission, and you don't want someone with you that's dragging you around. So when you plan to travel, and if you have the luxury of picking who you're going to travel with, pick people who are of the same level of mission as you. If you're a cross-country person who wants to hike every forest, don't take your chubby mate from high school.
Yeah, let's not do that.
Listen,
there's such a fine line there.
Couple of things I just want to sort out. First of all, a really cool tweet that we got just yesterday evening, and it's up on the timeline for this morning. Wade Hutchinson, who said he picked up my book Cliffhanger. He said, I've had this book for over a year, and it doesn't get old. Mm. I think this is the reason I'm reading this is because I didn't enjoy writing this book, and I found it a bit of a chore, and I didn't love any part of the process, but it's when I hear feedback like this, it makes me feel better, and then you don't feel that the project was a waste of time. He says, I could have read the book 50 times. Still to this day, it's one of the most valuable things I've bought with my money. I never wanted to be anyone else on radio. I wanted to be Gareth Cliff, opinionated and intelligent. Isn't that nice?
Oh. Mm.
So thanks, Wade. And the book, I mean, that book did really well, despite my hatred for it.
Why did you especially have hatred for it? Because you like to write. Mm. You're good at writing-ish.
Mm-mm. No, I didn't.
And you do it from time to time.
Yeah, but I don't mind doing the blogs. I liked the first book. This one was a mission because it felt like I had to write a book about this chapter of my life. Mm. It was about television, radio, freedom of expression. It was all of that put together. And there were a lot of cooks in the kitchen, you know. There were a lot of people with their opinion on it before it went. Manuscripts went back and forward. We made a lot of changes. It was very irritating to publish. And I also felt like I'd kind of been strong-armed into publishing it because I decided after my first book, that's it. Now, let's leave it alone until I've finished my life. Because you don't write anything autobiographical until you've lived. Mm. And I felt I hadn't lived long enough and I hadn't done enough yet to be able to write the book. So it's good to know that it worked. It's good to know that it sold. It was a bestseller. Both of the books, I'm thrilled to say, went right to the top of the charts. So I'm happy with that. I like success. But it's not going to come from a book again.
It took away the vision I had of authors, though.
Yeah, it's
because I saw the whole you watched it process. Happen.
It's such an unpleasant process.
Essays on deadlines, basically. Like, well, this is a chapter, it needs to be
also,
this far.
I would write something I thought was really funny, and then it would be chopped up. And
by your editor?
Well, like, everybody had a say. And suddenly, there was about three or four people who had some input into this book. And they'd say to me, oh, well, that's very funny, and that story's great, but it doesn't really fit with the arc of the book. And then I'd just get annoyed because I hate being told how to be creative. And I hate being told by people that it's got to fit into a certain mold. So if I think about it now, I get pissed off again. So let's not talk about it.
Because there was no one moment where you sat in the garden drinking English tea, started writing. It was the best of times and was the worst of times.
Hemingway style typewriter on garden furniture, drink, getting pissed, writing drunk, editing sober, out in the mountain cottage.
Look, don't get me wrong, it's a really good book, and I wanted it to be representative of the career I'd had up to then, which I was proud of. I'm proud of my career, but the book was a pain in the ass to write, and I will not be doing that again as long as I can possibly hold off.
Nice.
Yeah. So, anyway, the publishers also, they prevailed on me eventually because I wasn't that keen. But I got this message from somebody this morning. Guys, have you ever noticed how close behind your content 5FM are? When Gina and Edith were on the other day, the very next week they were on 5. Yesterday, you guys were talking about pizza, and I heard them speaking about it also. Now, I mean, that might be a
They stole pizza from the Gareth Cliff show. Listen.
Okay, but hang on. There have been so many things like this, but it's just amusing. So there are other examples. Cliff Central's leading the way forward, and it's great, but it just seems odd that 5FM are so close behind shows that they're running out of content. All right, well, let me address this in two ways. First of all, I knew when we went onto podcast it would allow talentless fucking douchebags like Roger Good to listen to us whenever he wants to, and then strip out the stuff that he can copy because he's got zero. He's creatively bankrupt. He made CDs in the 2000s. This is his claim to fame. Everything that he knows about good radio, he learned from me. He's got fucking nothing going for him. His audiences are one eighth of what they were when I was on that channel.
So is this what you were mincing?
Sensing a bit of bad blood and some rivalry.
Why this irritates me is don't fucking steal what we're doing. Don't try and copy a format that I invented. All right? Don't take stuff that we've sat here and thought about and worked out, and we've taken the risk of being original, and incorporate that into your shitty formatted bullshit commercial radio show and try to make it sound like it's yours. I hate that.
Yeah. Look, I mean, I don't...
Hold on, Gord. I'm still not finished with my rant.
Please. Yeah, that was a rant breath.
By the way, it's not just him.
Here we go.
It's not just him. There are a ton of people in radio who are all doing things that they consider to be perfectly normal radio now, that were not normal radio before we came along. And I'm just tired of this. Like, I don't often get precious because I think everything in the world, you put your own style in it and it's original. Right, there's no such thing as true.
Yeah, there's no true authenticity. Nothing new, brand new that hasn't been done.
I try to make things as real as possible here, and I just get so annoyed when I hear that some guy on a campus station or some fucking late night DJ who's trying to do what we did when we were starting out on commercial radio, all of this stuff. I clear the way for you, and then you try to leapfrog past me, which is impossible. I mean, we have ideas about what we could do on this show that I put in a folder that I know anywhere on commercial radio they'd be slavering at the chops for. And we don't get to because I would rather just be real than try to create and manufacture something out of nothing for you. You know, this artificial kind of radio where it just sounds so twee.
You mean I can be myself on the air?
You know, Gord, we've never told you what to do.
No, in fact, not once, so unfortunately.
I just want to say F you, a big fat F you to all these people in radio who think they're so brilliant.
In all of your...
You don't have a game until I come to town, you sons of bitches.
You once told me what to do. We got a comment from... Early on, we got a comment from a listener. It was like, Gord's too extra. He talks too much. He shouts and he fucking talks over everybody. Like, shut the fuck up and let the grown-ups speak or something to that effect. Oh, you gave me a world of shit about it on air. And when we walked off, you were like, that guy that complained, don't do any of the things he said you must change. Stay exactly the same and ignore him. I was like, okay, cool. I'll just stay exactly the same.
Not to say it shouldn't bother you.
No, here's the problem. I also know that whoever sent me that message, they're probably a big fan. Mm. But now you antagonize me first thing in the morning. Like, just rather let these assholes do what they're doing. Yeah. They've got no audiences anyway. Their audiences are tiny. And it's not the number of people. They've also got shit people listening to them. People who don't have the option, they can't afford the data to listen to us. So they take advantage of them and copy what we're doing, try to make it seem like they're passing it off as original.
Look, I've successfully...
But it shouldn't surprise you.
No, that is the sincerest form of flattery.
I get irritated. I know. I should just calm down.
You should just laugh and be like, listen, I mean... but I've managed to successfully avoid radio enough that I've had very few exposures to Roger Good. So I don't really have an opinion on him. I do know, however, that I hate that music. And he sounds like him.
What music?
He sounds like, you know when you get dragged off with mates who aren't your mates? Like you've got one mate that has like a 30th or a 40th and you don't get on with any of his mates. And they're all like a bunch of 3 Series BMW and Boardman's Live, Love, Laugh douchebags. Mm. But they're doing cocaine. And they're having the cocaine punishment conversations. Now, not for a second alleging anyone on that show is doing cocaine because I don't know or care. Yeah. But it sounds to me like when they talk, it sounds to me like people that I don't like having a railed up conversation with each other about how much they appreciate each other and what a jewel the weekend's going to be and then playing house music.
See, I don't have that experience because you have so much choice nowadays. So you can't be stuck in this... Boardman's Live, Love,
and it's
Laugh.
It's like you feel like circle, the age. I don't see you as massively like you are the young oak on the show, and we talk about it and whatever. And clearly, like you're younger than the rest of us, but I don't see you as coming from like a different generation or a different time or someone that's like, oh, the youngsters. But like I watched a interview with Billie Eilish and the Rolling Stone interview, and one of the questions.
Isn't she cool? She creeps me out a little, but I dig her.
Like I've got a morbid fascination with her. Like I don't want to like it. It goes against my list of things to not like that young people do. Anyway, they asked her what was the first CD you bought, and she's obviously like she's got this thing where she's very close with her mother, and her brother apparently makes her beats and does her production, so it's like a family thing. So she just yells out like, "Mom, did I ever buy a CD?" And the mom thinks about it and she's like, "I think you might have bought Justin Bieber when you were like 11, but I don't remember if we bought it or not." And she's like, "I don't think I've ever owned a CD." Like, wow. good question. And I'm like, shit, this girl's like 17, 18 years old. You know, she's 17. She's almost an adult. She will be in the blink of an eye. And I'm like, you might never have had to tape the radio. You might never have had 3 TV channels to choose from. Some things are foreign to you that for me were just part of life that I almost kind of miss in certain ways.
No, I don't miss that. Mm-mm.
Hey, has anybody
watched... You were never forced to listen to bullshit radio.
I want to move on. Has anybody watched this murder mystery? Apparently it is the most cool thing on TV right now. It's on Netflix.
Part of my ignorance and shows that I haven't watched it. It's called Murder Mystery.
Yeah, it's got Jennifer Aniston.
Oh, and Adam Sandler.
Mm-hmm. Adam Sandler's my worst, though.
I don't find him funny.
I can't stand him at all.
I don't, yeah.
He made like 3 movies or 4 movies in like the early or mid-90s that, while now very silly, that have aged badly, were like pretty on point with the zeitgeist at the time. Like Happy Gilmore, The Waterboy, The Wedding Singers, Billy Madison. Those were like funny because I was 14.
Yeah, yeah.
And they worked well. Mm. But like that like shouty, wide-mouthed, over-the-top crap. But there have been a couple of occasions where he like turns his attention towards something a bit more artistic. And like on 50 First Dates, he was okay. There's one where he was like the victim of a 9/11 thing.
Yeah.
Mr. Deeds. I have to tell you,
like I used to also loathe Adam Sandler because I thought he was just dumb.
I really don't know what it is.
But the guy is actually quite a genius. Like he's made a ton of money. He sells an audience what they want.
Sure,
that's for sure.
Sure. No doubt.
And he seems to be, like when he's not playing an idiot like Waterboy or whatever, he seems to be a really smart dude who's kind of he moves in the right Hollywood circles. He could produce any movie he wants because it brings box office returns. and he gets anyone he wants in his movies. But this murder mystery sounds like a whole different ballgame.
Well, the reason I mentioned it, sorry, Sia, is that I watched the trailer.
Oh, yeah.
It looks like a game of Cluedo brought to life, but he seems as if he's acting like a normal human being.
Yeah.
Like, my barometer for where he is on the Sandler scale is, if this behavior in real life, how long would it take you to get slapped by a stranger? Like, he doesn't look like anyone would just murder him for existing this movie. So he looks like maybe he's not being such a douche.
I just know we have Dr. John Carney starring in Murder Mystery. That's what I heard of it.
Okay.
And other than that, no.
Very good.
Is Ken Bobinski still down with the black lung?
No, he doesn't come in on Wednesdays anymore. He's trying to avoid you.
No, I know that's not true because he sent me messages about his longing for me. Yeah. And I know about his black lung. I just brought gifts.
Oh.
Yeah. So can I dispense
Bring
those
it
now?
On. I thought that was a hamburger.
Okay, so I got for everybody. I got for everybody.
I thought that was a burger.
CBD enriched cannabis chocolate.
Oh,
has no psychoactive effect, so it won't make you high.
Oh, really?
But it's got that CBD oil shit in it that's meant to like cure all known diseases and bring back your chakras and align your
chakra
pills.
Cons.
All right. So I got one for Leanne and one for Ben.
Thank
I'm going to give them to you to hang on to.
Thank you,
cannabis
daughter.
Chocolate.
And then I bought each of Sia and Ben a novelty condom, and this was going to be funnier if Ben was here. But I got you this one.
What does it say?
I love Amsterdam.
And then I got
condom.
Ben this one.
Ben got one that says cock, but it's like in the writing of Coke. Same graphic design. Taste the difference.
Yeah, so I got him a cock taste the difference condom, and I got you I love Amsterdam.
Ah, that's great.
Do you know this actually might come in hand?
Do you want to know something interesting?
I hope so.
I see on the packaging here, Amsterdam. Mm-hmm. It's got the three X's.
Yeah. Those are crosses of St. George, I believe.
Yeah, they're actually, that's the coat of arms of the city.
Yeah,
of Amsterdam.
And it's everywhere. I mean, it's by sheer coincidence. Amsterdam's fucking logo is a triple X.
No, it's not by coincidence because the triple X comes from there.
Is that where? No. Is that how the horse and the cart are arranged?
So if you Google XXX, you can get porn, right?
And yeah, well, exactly.
So it comes from Amsterdam's.
So XXX as a symbol for porn is named in honor of Amsterdam. I thought it was the most glorious because they're actually pluses. It's just the way that they're arranged on the on the shield that they look like X's.
St. Andrew's cross, which is a saltire, that's what they call it. It goes from, instead of standing up like a plus, it lies on its side like an
X. Is that what they are? I could have sworn the guy that told me it was St. George's crosses.
No.
But anyway, they're not X's, they're crosses. They're from back in the day when that design was innocuous, but it's the coolest thing. It's just like a black shield with red trim and three white X's down the middle, and they have it on everything.
That's correct. And what that eventually led to, this is why I tell people heraldry is not dead, it's still very much alive, even though it's a medieval art. It's contributed to porn even.
I always marvel at the show from Billie Eilish to coat of arms.
Isn't that
you cannot tell me you don't learn anything from here.
Amsterdam's a wild place. In the red light district, I would never have conceived of myself as being in any way conservative. Like, not a lot bothers me. You have to get pretty like, should I think that's illegal before it bothers me. Like, you send me a clip and it's like a dude gay sexing whatever, some straight guys freak right out. I'm like, okay, why did you send me this? Fine, whatever. It takes a lot to bother me, but it's not about being conservative from the perspective of like, I hate this, I think this should be shut down, I don't think other people should be allowed to do this. But I thought I would roll into the red light district and be like, whatevs, I've seen it all. In the windows, look at them, dude. Like, they are porn star hot. Look, they're like...
Yeah, you said they were really hot.
I mean, they're very like... Okay, I don't believe in slattiness or any of those terms, but they look like porn stars. You wouldn't take them home to your mom without maybe letting them change their outfit. They're very slutty. I can't think of another way to put it.
Do they look very well put together?
They look like the hottest girls from porn you've ever seen.
Like, you wouldn't say, oh my gosh, they're
kept. No, you would fall over and die if one of these ladies walked past you, even dressed normally in a shopping center.
Ooh.
Like, I saw 100 of the 1,000 hottest chicks in the world in these windows. But they dressed like they're about to start a proper porn scene, and when you look at them, they're looking
what
for
are some
eye
of the
content.
Outfits I'm they're so fascinated,
like, dude, just Google like porn lingerie and that's
I'm really
what
annoyed. I was in Amsterdam last year and I was in the red light district, but I was there too early in the night.
Once got there during
shift
change.
Yeah.
They do a day shift and then they close for about an hour and a half and then they do a night shift. So from like 3 p.m. till about 4:30. I stand to be corrected on those times.
But, and the whips, chains, and nurses' outfits.
But the point is that like, you want to look at them and just look because it's a novelty. But the moment they catch you and make eye contact with you, which is immediately...
They want you to pay.
I stared at... No, I just... I couldn't look at women like they were items for sale in a fish tank. I would not be able to go through with it in that environment.
Wow.
No judgment upon people who engage in the oldest profession. It's not my business and it's up to them, etc., etc. As long as no one's being coerced, let people do what they want. But sure. I couldn't go into one of those rooms, and I would have thought... Hypothetically, it wouldn't be a thing that got me in that place of like, you got to get away from here. You've got to get away from here. Like being just from a more conservative place. I can look at strippers.
Were you surprised that you felt like
that? Yes.
When Gord talks about looking them in the eye, just we've got to get to five things. But look at this quickly. This is from Marion Cotillard. She's quite a hot. I think she's an actress, and she talks about forehead tétés, where you basically paste these two like tiny little breasts onto your forehead
as a woman
so that men will look you in the eye, right?
It's spelled
in America, anything is possible. It is the land of opportunity, a place where dreams come true. But women in America must still deal with sexual objectification wherever they go, especially in the workplace. French women have known for centuries that to earn a man's respect, you must make him look you in the eyes. Introducing Forehead Tétés by Genet, France's best kept
look
secret.
Like avocados.
Lab tests prove that forehead tétés actually redirect the male gaze from the chest to the general area of the brain. Forehead tétés, sleek, elegant design, earns their respect without sacrificing your femininity.
So as the listener can probably imagine, there's a woman with a pair of realistic tits on her forehead.
And easily applied.
There's a forehead tété for everyone. Because respect never goes out of style.
Forehead tétés by Genet. Make them almost look you in the eyes.
Now that's the
tétés. Eyes are up here.
Forehead tétés.
Yeah, I wonder how they got those sample tétés to stick on their forehead.
That's so great. I just thought forehead tétés when I saw it the other day needs to be played.
That's all right, funny.
Five things you need to know. You want to get into it?
Yeah, let's get into it.
All right, because people still like the news. First thing in the news this morning, Instagram chief insists it doesn't spy on users. Now, this is something that I think a lot of people are probably annoyed with. Instagram doesn't snoop on private conversations as part of its advertising targeting strategy, the head of the popular social media site said in an interview on Tuesday. We do not look at your messages. We don't listen in on your microphone. Doing so would be super problematic for a number of different reasons.
Super problematic.
He actually said the words
super problematic.
What a fucking idiot. Instagram chief Adam Mosseri said in an interview with CBS, it's super problematic. He said, but I recognize you're not going to believe me.
We so recognize you won't believe us.
During the interview, he acknowledged that he's grilled regularly by Instagram users who insist they receive ads from restaurants, stores, and other companies after conducting a private conversation about an item.
And craft beer distilleries.
Like its parent company, Facebook, Instagram, a social media site for posting photographs, offers a private messaging system as well as a platform to post items to followers. Mm.
Yep, you get DM'd up in Instagram all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You get those random ones where it's like two message requests and it's just some like obvious fake profile with a picture of a woman and it's like they've somehow managed to spell a two-letter word wrong. It's like, hi, but it's incorrect.
I really get to know you like.
Yeah, I really like to know your profile.
You saw a restaurant on Facebook or Instagram and you really like the thing. Top of mind, maybe it's subconscious and then it bubbles up later, he said. I think this kind of thing happens often in a way that's really subtle. He's trying to make it look like they don't spy on you, but we know they do.
Well, I mean, he kind of said they don't, so maybe they don't.
Because
he's saying that they're not monitoring your DMs. He's saying they're not monitoring your private inbox conversations. Doesn't say a word about we're not monitoring your regular conversations on posts, your hatefulness in the comments,
your likes, watch
the hashtags are on the shit you're liking. You know, you follow like 12 pages associated with garden shit.
Yeah,
so they
send you a lawnmower ad.
He's not
I'd
saying
like to
they
point
don't do
out
that.
Something to advertisers who are convinced that social media with all its big data is the best way to go, because I keep getting ads for games, and I don't play any of these games.
Any. Video games.
Yeah, video games, games for on your phone. I don't play any of them.
Everybody gets the phone ads, though. Those are the dudes right, with the budgets.
So but my, my point is that this shit about targeted advertising is just, it's not true. It doesn't work. In my case, it irritates me even more. Now, even if I wanted to play those games before or I was ambivalent, now I hate them.
And now you hate them.
See, because I don't mind it. If it's done well, then I'm like, yeah, actually, it is convenient. No, if I'm on my timeline somewhere and it's something that I need, sure, take me to that website.
Yeah, I'm not
it's
offended the by the existence of ads. I'm offended by the repetition. And also, like, I've got a friend whose mom is like obsessed with Scottish terriers, and one of her Scottish terriers died and got sick and it died, and I sent her a message, and like I had an conversation with her in a Facebook inbox about, I'm really sorry to hear about your Scotty, I know how close you were with the dog, it must have been awful, sorry to hear it. That's it, one conversation about a Scottish terrier that passed away. It's my only engagement with, mention of, or interaction about Scottish terriers in my fucking life, and I still get the ads for like the badly photoshopped shirts where it's like they've done Scottish terrier Game of Thrones knockoffs and a Scottish terrier Wu-Tang Clan logo and some multi-font soup shit about like that. A hero lives inside all of us, just ask a Scottish terrier, and it never stops. I'm like, why, guys? Yeah. One conversation ever.
All right, other news. Mineral Resources and Energy Minister Gwede Mantashe said on Tuesday, South Africa remains a highly attractive destination for investment in mining. However, he said a secure energy supply was crucial. Speaking during a debate...
You don't say.
...on the State of the Nation address on Tuesday, Mantashe said 60 mining projects with an investment value of more than $110 billion were in the pipeline for the period from now until 2020. He said the projects could create as many as 32,000 jobs. You know what irritates me about Gwede and a whole lot of these guys is they're pretending like we're doing well. They're pretending the economy's good. And it is not. And mining and energy have become one of the biggest drains on the economy. Mining is, first of all, a tenth of what it once was. It's not the massive GDP-producing industry sector that it used to be. And energy, of course, is a complete disaster. So as Minister of Minerals and Energy.
Literally those two things.
Mineral energy.
Minerals and energy. He's not like up. Minerals, energy, and newspaper production. He's those two things suck.
And you're just, dude, you are completely, you're just so lacking in credibility.
Yeah, nothing's working.
No one can believe in you.
It's like being the minister of the Proteas and Steve Hoffmeyer.
Exactly. Two things that have just not worked. Oh, right.
Two shit
in fact,
your portfolio.
I reckon the minister of the Proteas and Steve Hoffmeyer has more going on than Gwede Mantashe.
Yeah, he's got a chance to turn it around.
All right. And then a third story you need to know about this morning. There's quite a lot going on in the news, actually. There was this talk about a water shutdown.
Mm-hmm. Oh, shit, yeah, I forgot about that.
But, yeah, you don't have to worry, apparently. The network is operational, stable, all reservoirs are meeting demand. That was that 54-hour water shutdown, which began on Monday morning. Now, I know people who filled up their baths. I know people who put bottles of water
in
the fridge.
And we were warned not to do that.
Yeah, of course.
Well, I was told about it as a possible thing. It's like they're shutting down supply to the reservoirs. So the reservoirs will be full. If they get used while whatever repair or whatever infrastructural stuff is being done, if they get emptied, the main water supply, presumably coming from the filtration plant at the dams, that is going to be temporarily shut down. So it's like, cool, we're going to fill your fish tank. Mm. It won't be filled again for 4 or 5 days. If you finish it in that time, you're going to be out of water.
Well, a lot of people in the office here were also trying to make a plan in case they didn't get any water, and we got into a big debate the other day about whether or not they should have actually even told people about this, because obviously there are a lot of people who like to be informed, but it did create a bit of a panic.
Gotta give people a heads up.
Yeah,
but you gotta manage it. You gotta say there is a 50-70% likelihood that for between 1 and 4 days there'll be a disruption to the water supply. It will likely not happen, and if it does happen, it will probably only be for a day, but please be prepared. And like, because I remember when there was a water shutdown, and like I didn't know about it, and then it was like for a whole day or for 2 days, I think, and I couldn't find bottled water for miles and miles and miles around. But what I do is I just, like, in theory, I keep enough of those 5 liter drinking water bottles to drink water and make coffee.
Right.
And then I just go fill big buckets from the complex swimming pool. And then I drive to a faraway gym and shower there.
And there's something about water that just takes us all back to that basic level. Yeah, yeah. Electricity, we can make plans around.
But people get very nervous.
Oh, no, you'll bite your neighbor's face off and murder them with your fingernails if it's about getting the last water.
Yeah.
You will. All right, other news. Port Elizabeth, it seems gang violence in PE continues to claim lives. 91 people have been killed since January.
Holy shit. Yeah. This year.
Mm-hmm. Khoi and San activists are now calling on the government to declare a state of emergency there. Former 1986 Springbok Ronald Bell is devastated by what's going on. He says, it's a heartache to see that our next generation is dying out before it even starts. Young men of 22, 23, maybe the only son in the family, being brutally killed, and that's the end of the bloodline, he said.
And usually over some bullshit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Khoi and San leaders are trying to show the boys there's another way to live, but they feel that more needs to be done to stop gang violence. A special commission that can go around and find out what is going on should be called. The commission must be led by a judge. It must come up with findings and recommendations, said Christian Martin, who's a Khoi and San activist. Community leaders in the area believe if more men act as role models for the boys, peace can finally reign. You know, again, it goes back to this comes up so many times on this show, but this whole father figure, male role model thing, we've got the biggest gap in South Africa for that. I think we're probably at the front of the queue, and Nobile, who listens to us, was on the line just yesterday or the day before, and he was saying he wants to get a convention together to get young men discussing this stuff in a very real way. I mean, we try to talk about it every now and then here on the show, but I think this is way bigger a problem than people even know.
Yeah, at first I just thought it was general protest culture, but sitting with the idea for a bit, it's quite sad that these citizens are resorting to this point where they really want to grab the nation's attention in some way.
And then Elson called us yesterday about his country, Zimbabwe, and they're in the news because President of Zimbabwe, Emmerson Mnangagwa, said on Tuesday the crisis-hit country was returning to normal as it moved to end foreign currency systems. Back to normal that have been in operation for a decade. Country has used US dollars and South African rand since 2009 when the old Zimbabwe dollar was rendered worthless.
Just stop using your own currency and start using someone else's.
Same way you change pants.
In a step towards the introduction of a new currency, the central bank on Monday said US dollars and rands would be replaced by local parallel currencies. Notes.
Local parallel currency.
Mm-hmm. I don't know.
I mean, nobody wants to use Zim dollars. Yeah. Bond notes were introduced in 2014, while electronic RTGS, that's real-time gross settlement dollars, came in earlier this year. Both were, in theory, worth the same as US dollars, but trade far below the greenback in value. What we have done is going back to normalcy, Mnangagwa told reporters. Normalcy is what a country must have when it has its own currency. We're living in an abnormal situation. We should be congratulating ourselves for taking this step. You know when someone says we should be congratulating ourselves, that's probably a bad thing to say. It means you don't know what's going on. The country has recently endured another bout of sharply rising prices. Official inflation is now nearly at 100%, the highest since the hyperinflation era when it hit 500 billion%.
Yeah, I'm doing a lot of work with the good people at TBWA Huntlascaris at the moment. Yeah. None of my rantings nor opinions are any reflection of them or their policies.
Great disclaimer.
But they did that famous ad where they put a newspaper ad in the newspaper, which was essentially printed on Zimbabwean dollars, and it said it cost more to. And it's like huge. It's a huge poster that you pulled out of the newspaper. It was for a newspaper, if I'm not mistaken, and it was like it cost more to print this than the money it's printed on.
Yep.
And quite a famous ad.
Brilliant ad.
Yeah, massive poster made of Zimbuck saying it cost more to print. It cost more to print this than the money crazy. It's on. And these were big notes.
All right. That's the news. We've got some other things I want to get to in a second. But do you want to hear a clip here from somebody?
Sure.
Let me see if I can find out who this is from. No names. All right, so let's just go straight to it. Here we are.
Hi, guys. So about the Instagram listening in on your conversation, of course, a lot of people have complained over the years that if you mention a product around your phone and then suddenly you see that product everywhere on Instagram and on Facebook, and everybody perceives that to be as Instagram or your phone listening to your conversations. Now, your phone might be listening to your conversations, but the truth of the matter is nobody has been able to find evidence that Instagram actually does this, from reverse engineering the Instagram code and how it gathers data. No programmer has been able to find any evidence of that. What happens, however, is that Instagram works with a lot of data collection partners, and these partners collect a lot of information about you from other activities online. So your browsing history, your interaction with other applications on your phone. And what might be happening is that other applications might have access to your microphone, might have access to, for example, Google Voice.
All right, yeah, we get the basic idea. I mean,
There's still someone listening.
There's enough that you openly talk about that you don't need to be listened in on. Like, I'm not suggesting that the technology doesn't exist where the government could turn on your webcam, or a hacker in Russia that wants to fuck with you could turn on your webcam. Mm. Like, it is possible, but to think that you're so special that it's actually happening is highly unlikely. And like, that you discuss enough openly for this thing to have a very good guess with its algorithm. Like, you talk in comments threads, you like certain pages and products, you chat about the cricket with your crickety mate, you know, on an open Facebook post. Like, you people are like, oh my God, they're listening to my private conversations.
Yeah,
most people, I mean, and this is an assumption based on my own behavior, but I think most people, while a lot of DMing does go along, go on, once you're into someone's DMs and you want to carry on chatting with them, you usually move to WhatsApp or to Messenger or to Telegram. Like, your life doesn't happen in the DMs, and everyone's like, are they or are they not listening to that? Mm. They don't need to, because they are openly and are allowed to listen to everything else you say.
Right. And they can put the...
Why the subtterfuge when you're putting it all on
the puzzle
together?
It's like,
here's my whole life on a table, and there may or may not be something in the small locker in the next room.
Mm.
Like,
I just think, though, whoever's at play here, Instagram is still the frontman in this situation, and I think they could have said something a little more meatier or responsible.
Yeah. Well, they said it's really problematic, super problematic.
Don't talk like a 12-year-old girl to me, and rather.
But where is Instagram? Didn't I send you guys that? That thing with like the rankings of the biggest websites, and like porn is somewhere in
it's way bigger than Instagram.
Up there fighting with the big boys. Instagram's not the front runner. They're somewhere in the top 10, and I don't want to say where because I can't remember.
A few other things. Who's this new Gugu guy on the show? He's like that annoying but famous wrestler that always won matches. I smell some talent there.
Which annoying wrestler?
Gugu. Hey? Yeah, Gugu is the new junior producer on this show, but he's also he's one of our series producers here at Cliff Central. Just come on board. How long have you been here? 2 weeks?
No, I think we've passed the 2 week mark now. It's a month. Yeah.
A month. All right.
Gugu, do you think you know who you're being compared to? A wrestler?
Dude, I haven't been in a fight since I was probably like 12. Yeah. So I don't know how.
I don't know if this is really about fighting. I think it might be about your fame.
Yeah.
All right, so there we go. That's an interesting comment from somebody. Here's one from Brandon. Brandon says, "Hey, Gord, I too am a fat, sexy mofo, and I'm working every day to lose weight."
Nice, bro.
"Apart from the no-calorie food around me, I'm living in Vietnam now. The best thing I've done to lose 18 kilograms is a treadmill and your show every day. I just want to say thanks for making my 1 hour treadmill session every day the best time for me to learn, laugh, and miss home. Love you guys, Brandon."
Yeah, man.
Nice.
I'm not on every day, but if my struggles with this fucking mission are helping anybody, then that makes it really worthwhile for me. I just find exercise and mobility, man, it's such a great thing. Even weight loss aside, it's let weight loss be a byproduct and just get yourself moving in any way you can, if no matter how hard it is. Walk 10 steps and do 11 in 2-3 days time. To be able to move around is far more important than what your weight is. So yeah, just move, dude.
Preach.
Lee says, "I bought train tickets in Italy last week, and now all the ads on all my social media are for Italia Rail.
But you probably didn't do it in your private DM conversations. You probably just did it on an open website that's allowed to know what you're doing.
And then here's one. Hey, guys, I'm listening to you live. Love it. Today I'm going for a discectomy. Super expensive, especially if you don't have medical aid. But I had to dig up 100,000 rand to get rid of this pain. And would love to hear how grumpy Ben's back is doing, as I could relate, as I now have back issues. Fingers crossed for the surgery today. Been a fan since day one. I never miss a podcast. Sia, you're a sweetheart. Cliff, he or she says, super wise. Leanne is so crazy and gourd. You're cuck funny.
Thank you. No, nice. Well, just spell that. Dice what?
Well, it's the the surgical removal of the whole or part of the invertebral... that one, the spine disc, one of the discs on the spine.
I live in that world, man. That's
Aina.
My back can, when it fights against me, I don't win.
A discectomy.
So they cut off some part of the disc or the vertebra or something. Dude, well, you know, hopefully, or lady person, hopefully that sorts you out. Because back issues are the worst. I hope it's worth every cent because I know about back issues.
Aina.
All right, very good. That's all.
If I could pay 100 grand for my back never to hurt again, I would happily pay it.
Really?
I just, dude, surgeries around your vertebrae and stuff. That's like, I get really sore and then I do a bunch of rehab work and then, you know, I'm usually fine for a long time after that. So, like, I would consider it if, when things are bad, if it was like that all the time, I'd seriously consider it. But you don't fuck about with surgeries in that area unless you really need them. So if you forked out 100 grand cash because the pain's so bad, you're willing to pay 100 grand for people to operate on your back, you must have been very sore. Mm. And that's a lot of money, and I really hope it works out for you.
Well, we always have a bunch of doctors on standby. You know, we've got Dr. Robin, who's the obstetrician. We've got Dr. Jonathan Witt.
Mm-hmm.
It's called a discectomy. So it's not a discectomy. It's a discectomy.
Oh, you were pronouncing the C as a silent.
Well, no, he didn't put it in the the spelling. A discotomy. Apparently,
God, they're taking a disc out. Are they replacing it?
We have so many doctors who listen to us. It's great.
Yeah. Very.
Oh. All right.
Well, I bet you Roger Good gets those corrections all the time. Yeah, about to fucking break your jawbone. And one of his listeners is like,
let's just leave it alone.
Can't break your jawbone.
Said by Sia time. I'm over it. I had my rant. Let's move. What do you got, Sia?
Look, yesterday we spoke about the gamer who raised money through this online stream that he's doing. It seems like another young person just spends a lot of their time behind a computer, but actually they're doing a lot of good. So if you think about it, it's estimated that more than 26 million people around the world have dug into their family history with the help of some sort of DNA kit.
Right.
But finding your ancestors often requires much more than just simply submitting your DNA. So in this growing field, it's actually surprising that there's a very unlikely hero here. It's an 18-year-old from New Jersey in the United States, and his name is Eric Schubert. And he's become this pro at reconnecting people with their families.
Oh, yeah?
To date, he's helped more than 1,000 people find their roots. So Eric just was very interested with genealogy from about 10 years old. And he started out just investigating more about his family. And the more he dug into history and using the internet, he started realizing that he could help more and more people. So when he'd go onto certain websites and he'd realize that there were some people who were adopted and needed some help or didn't have access to certain resources, he'd contact those people and say, look, I know it's kind of random, but I'd like to help you out. The people would say yes. And there we go. He's now helped more than 1,000 people connect with their families. This Eric is 18 years old, hasn't even graduated from high school, Nochal. And he says, oh, it's all just a big puzzle. You just have to look at all the pieces and put it together in the correct places. And he says he often just takes a couple of days to find answers for his clients that have spent more like decades in some cases searching for some of their family members. Right. He's helped some people who were adopted, some people who've just separated with their family. And I really think this is cool. You know, so this is an 18-year-old who spends his days at school, then goes back home and just casually reconnects people with their family.
Amazing.
Isn't that awesome?
Yeah.
Good for him.
Also just shows the power of the internet and what the internet can do.
Also,
so,
it shows that if you really wanted to, you could probably find it yourself. Like,
yeah.
True. Have a dig around on the internet. Find some relatives.
It's a discectomy. That's the word we're looking for. Discectomy.
I love that it's been bothering you ever since we weren't sure.
I know it was.
No, all right.
And is it the removal of a disc?
Yeah.
Fuck me.
Well, or you play around with that according to what Google says.
Big thanks to Gord for bringing everybody cannabis chocolate.
And condoms.
CBD oil condoms.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very, very nice. By the way, speaking of cannabis, our friends at Colcacchio Pizzeria, you know Michael and Kinga.
Yeah, bro, I saw this news.
Yeah, they're making a pizza with cannabis.
I believe it's also a CBD oil and not necessarily like get you motor high.
It's not to get you high. It's
to give you all of the health benefits of CBD, which is trendy as fuck at the moment, let's face it.
There we go. If you're in Cape Town and you want to try them, I don't know if they're all over the country yet, but they're certainly doing it.
But they sound nice too. I remember I read the ingredients and I can't remember them offhand. They sound very nice. The one's called like a Queen Mary Jane or something to that effect, and the other one is called like a green something or other. Huh. But they actually like don't sound like entirely about novelty. They look like they'd be quite yummy as
sounds
well.
Sounds good. Mm. All right, let's get on with your morning. We got things to do, people to see, places to go. Bunch of stories in the news and plenty of
and
cool
some
stuff.
Beats to pump.
Some beats to pump,
clap
baby.
The gym button.
Yeah.
This is CliffCentral.com.